Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:41 British Summer Time. Today is May 29th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And in fact, we could stretch that out and say that because this is the end of May, and May has been a rather remarkable month, let's review what's actually been happening over the last month. Because this has been a month in which we've seen the impressive gains from early March moving into a consolidation for the majority of lagging stock markets. And by lagging stock markets, I would count much of Europe and the USA. The Dow and the S&P have pretty much been going sideways for the better part of this month, and the same is more or less true for a good part of Europe. But that isn't the whole story, because over in Asia and in Latin America, we continue to see relative strength, and markets there have continued to improve. We see, for example, in Japan that it has been going sideways for a month, but that it is forming what is increasingly looking like a first step above this quite small base, and one of the most reliable continuation patterns going is the breakout from a first step above the base. And the same type of evidence is now being seen in Hong Kong and a number of those leading markets in Asia, such as mainland China or Taiwan, have been improving throughout the month. It's certainly not going up at these markets are not going up at the same speed that they were going up back in March and April, but we continue to see that what is turning into now a 3-month uptrend for a number of markets remains consistent, and nothing has happened to shake the people who are long out of their positions. There has been really quite little in the way of downward dynamics for a large number of these markets, laggards and leaders together, and there continues to be evidence of what many people are talking of as a pain trade. For all those fund managers who are looking at their bottom line, not in the market, there are still large amounts of cash on the sidelines, looking at the market and seeing that we have just completed the 5th month of the year, that markets year to date, the Nasdaq is up 11%, Canada is up 15%, Brazil is up 40%, Hong Kong is up 26%, Stockholm or Sweden is up 17% year to date. And that is quite a remarkable advance this year. And if someone is tracking a benchmark in any of those markets and they're not heavily long at present, then their chances of catching up and beating their benchmark this year are becoming quite remote. The Dow Jones is still down 3, almost 4%. The S&P is up 1% for the year. So they are. And what we've seen for Wall Street and for much of Europe has been that markets have been pretty much going sideways for the better part of 7 months. But we have also seen that they've been remarkably steady. And this continues to look like base formation development, that the 3-month uptrend from the March lows, and those were new lows for a number of markets, remain intact. And there continues to be new buyers pushing this market higher. In the bond markets, we've seen this month that there was a concerted push to the downside in treasuries, and the market has steadied up somewhat in the final days of the month. Treasury yields have almost doubled from their lows almost 6 months ago. And that was a type 1 bottom in yields, type 1 top in price, and now we're getting the type 1 acceleration to the upside, suggesting to us that the safe haven status that saw thousands of investors, if not hundreds of thousands of investors, running to the safety of the treasury market is unwinding. And people are now starting to look around, they're looking at the post-apocalyptic world, the world after the flood, and thinking about how they're going to structure their investments. And indeed, there's also an argument as to how we should structure our politics and our corporate governance in the future. Because if we are to avoid the types of crises that we've had in 87, 97, 2007, 2008, then we are going to have to change something. And that does suggest that we are going to need better standards of corporate governance. Not necessarily more regulation, but certainly smarter regulation. And there continues to be a level of coordination between the world's governments that we haven't seen before in an effort to allay the fears of investors and to avoid the 1930s style depression that so many people have predicted, although and certainly not at this service. So we are now in a world where there is masses of liquidity being thrown at markets, and inflation is not a problem at the moment. But when we look at, for example, the TED sp oh, sorry, the TIPS spread, which are the inflation-protected securities issued by the Treasury, then that spread has widened out quite considerably, having been almost zero in the latter part of last year. So back in October, people were dead cert that we were going to go into this depression and that deflation was not just going to be a short-term threat, but a long-term threat. And the instance of Japan was being touted around as the inevitable consequence of the events that were unfolding. But people are now thinking of something different. They're looking around the world and they're saying that all of this liquidity being added in every economy in the world is potentially inflationary. And we look back at quantitative easing and the history of fiat money, and it has been nothing but inflationary. We could also say, for example, that Japan ended up with a lost decade because of its deflation domestically, but all those low-yielding yen flooding around the world caused inflation just about everywhere else in real assets or anything that was higher yielding than Japan. And today we are in a world where we have near zero interest rates in some of the largest economies in the world. Governments are flooding the market with liquidity, and they're flooding the market with new bonds to pay off the bad debts that were built up in the credit bubble. That does raise questions as to at what level investors are willing to take on this amount of paper before they start to demand higher yields. And certainly yields have pushed up over the last couple of months, and certainly in the month of May. The accelerated low that we saw on the 10-year yield in the USA, where it got down to 2%, was probably the bottom for this market, which has been seeing lower yields on a concerted basis for almost 30 years. When we look at the 3-month yield, they got to below zero back in October and November. Well, they just can't go lower than that. And while base formation development for yields may take a number of years, there is a strong likelihood that we have seen the bottom of this bull in the or bull market in bonds or bear market in yields. And there is the strong likelihood that yields will get higher from here. That position will not really be confirmed until we see the 10-year yield pushing and sustaining a move above 5.25%, and that's a long way from today. What we see in the short term is that bonds are really quite oversold, and there is strong potential for a relief rally to take place in the short to medium term. But considering the supply that is hitting markets and will continue to hit markets over the coming years, there is a strong likelihood that bond prices are going to be shorts on rallies for a significant period of time. The winning strategy for people that have worked in the bond market for more than 7 or 8 years has been always to buy bonds on dips, because it has paid in terms of the market appreciation to do that ever since the yields peaked back in the early 80s. That is probably going to change over the coming years, and this is something that will unfold over a long period of time. We've just been through the biggest financial crisis in living memory, and that is an interlocution in the market which is going to take time to work through. The types of consistent trends that we had before the big drawdown that we saw in the third quarter of last year is also going to take time to get back on track. And it is interesting that commodities were the asset class that proved to be the last of the momentum trades to give way and is one of the first to start to get going again now that confidence is just beginning to return to markets. And with liquidity starting to come back into markets and with the vast sum of cash continuing to sit on the sidelines, we are seeing that the emerging Asia, commodity producing Latin America, and select technology markets are what are leading this move to the upside. When we look around the world at a sector that is leading, and there will always be one sector that leads in any new bull market, for the simple reason that you don't have a new big bull market until you've got a sound fundamental story to help drive it. And today, that sound fundamental story is China. China continues to lead the world in terms of its economic growth. It's one of the only countries in the world that has the surpluses necessary to fund the stimulus packages that it is unleashing on its own economy and which are increasingly being felt around the Asian region and in the commodity producing countries of the world. And of course, there is also the fact that China is moving up the value chain. They quite smartly started out by producing the types of things that no one else could produce cheaper. And they are slowly moving away from that, and it is only a matter of time before we see Chinese cars on the roads in the developed world. The Chinese have also been they are monopolizing the production of rare earth metals. And they are competing strongly with a view to attracting high-end types of technology and industry to China, and they have this rare earth metal monopoly, so they do have leverage in attracting industry to their domestic economy. And it is these types of policies which are helping to ensure that China has a bright future in front of it. We have talked over a number of years about the enterprising East versus what is an increasingly moribund West. The population centers of the world, which are focused in Asia, continue to lead the market in terms of GDP growth, but they're increasingly catching up in terms of innovation. And with the debt problems that we have in the West, then there is room for Asia to move up the value chain to become more competitive because cash is king in this environment and is likely to remain so for a significant period of time. With that in mind, it is probably going to be a wise move to have at least part of one's portfolio with a focus on the growth centers of the world. Whether one is inclined to invest outside of one's home currency or not is an entirely personal decision, and of course institutions will perhaps not have so much leeway. But there are a number of companies in any country which will have leverage, which will have exposure to the Asian growth story or to commodity producers. The UK is particularly blessed with having some of the largest miners in the world listed in the UK, and they have been some of the best performers from the October lows. For example, Rio Tinto is up over 200%. And granted, it had one of the largest drawdowns, falling from £70 down to £10. But it is also showing recovery potential, and the debt problems that it has will eventually be worked out, and it will likely be left with some of the best resources in the world, and in a company that is domiciled in a part of the world where there is respect for minority shareholder rights, which is a constant worry for investors looking for the long term. For example, Russia is also a market that has done remarkably well over the last few months and is blessed with some of the best resources in the world. But governance is certainly something that will keep investors with a concern for a long period of time, because there is very little respect for minority shareholder rights. Going forward, governance is not something that we can take for granted in the Western world, and there will have to be serious changes with how regulation is enforced in the Western world if investors are to continue to have faith in the ability of these markets to perform. In fact, we've been presented with a remarkable opportunity to make the types of smart decisions now that would never have been passed 3 or 4 years ago. In that regard, I do agree with the wit who said that we should never lose the opportunity of a good crisis, or words to that effect. The population centers of the world, primarily in Asia and in the Middle East, are in dire need of massive infrastructure development. They have huge young populations that need education, schools, homes, sewage, water, power, air conditioners, washing machines, and the luxuries in life that we take for granted. And they're working towards it, and they're increasingly moving to a situation where larger numbers of people can afford these types of conveniences. And none of this happens without the per capita consumption of commodities increasing. It is with that bull fundamental story that is helping to drive commodity producers. The fact that China has the cash to pay for them pulls China in, and of course is also one of the largest population centers in the world, pulls China into a dominant part of that equation. Economies that are benefiting from China's ability to push money into its own economy and help to stimulate by association large numbers of other economies in Asia, Latin America, and increasingly in Africa is helping to create a new center of gravity of economic activity in the world. We are now in a multipolar world, and that world is likely to become even more fragmented while at the same time becoming more interconnected. India will, in due course, also exert influence in terms of its economic prowess, as well as having the USA and Europe as economic centers. And Brazil is also a market where when people started talking about Brazil 5, 6 years ago, the witty, although cruel quote of General de Gaulle that Brazil has enormous potential and always will have was being shunted around the market with abandon. Nobody's talking like that today. Brazil currently is running surpluses. They are cutting interest rates from extremely high levels, and their economy is surviving the global crisis in relatively better shape than the vast majority of those in what are deemed to be developed markets. Going forward, we're looking for the markets that are going to perform best. And right now, it is emerging Asia and commodity producing Latin America. In the event that we do end up with very low growth in the USA and Europe. And with low growth, we have lower interest rates for a long period of time. Then the potential for carry trades to go around the world in search of higher yielding assets remains undaunted. And that would fuel the potential for bubbles to develop in places such as Brazil or China or India or any of these other emerging markets with sound fundamental stories that people can build their own story in terms of a long-term investment around. And it is to these markets that we can probably begin to look for signs that larger numbers of investors are putting their money in there. With the commodity complex and these markets that are in some way related, all pushing to the upside, it does now suggest that people want to have their money in something that has real value. And commodities, you can't just go out and increase the supply of commodities overnight. You've either got to work them out of the ground or grow them, and they tend to hold their value in inflationary times. You can certainly talk to anyone in Zimbabwe, and they will assure you of that fact. Whether they will outperform in massively inflationary times or not is another question entirely. But if investors are looking for something that will hold its value, at least hold its value, as governments continue to push forward with quantitative easing, which is a polite way of saying debasing the currency, then there is a fundamental driver behind owning commodities for the long term. Gold is pushing up over the last month in particular, and is currently sitting at over $350, and I think over $360 in here today. It's consolidated for the better part of a year, and well, actually, it's consolidated for more than a year. We've seen on two previous occasions that gold consolidated for more than a year and exploded to the upside. At the chart seminar, we teach that trading ranges are explosions waiting to happen because they help to thin out supply above and demand below the market. And if we see gold sustaining a move above $1,000, then there is potential for it to push significantly beyond $1,000. And sometime later this year would be a likely period of time for that to happen, although as I pull up my screen now, gold is at $978.95, which is less than, well, it's just over $21 from that $1,000 level. So we might see something like that happening a little bit sooner. Silver was up 52 cents just today and is sustaining this move above $15 extremely well, having consolidated its impressive and remarkably consistent move up to the $14 level over the last 2 months. So that is also a sign that investors are looking to precious metals as long-term stores of value. And gold has enormous potential to continue to push to the upside. If we break any bull or bear market down into its component parts, there are three psychological perception stages. The first is disbelief, or probably better described as ignorance, because people need to have heard of something to disbelieve in it. And gold, back when it was at $250, most people hadn't even considered gold as a potential investment vehicle at that time. We have probably finished the second stage, which is acceptance, because I think at this point everybody has heard of gold as a relative performer, as a store of value, and as a potential long-term investment. We won't be in the third psychological perception stage until people start to really push into gold with a view to holding gold as the main part of their long-term portfolio. Certainly, there are people out there doing just that today, but they are the minority. When you hear of people giving up their jobs to trade gold or giving up their jobs to go to some remote corner of the world to attempt to dig it out of the ground, then we will almost undoubtedly be at the latter stage of the third psychological perception stage of a bull market, which is euphoria. We're certainly not there yet. And gold is not appreciating in every currency. It is certainly performing much better in all currencies now than it was at the beginning of May, for example, but it is not hitting new highs in all currencies, which, when it does start to do that, will be a clear indication that people are moving into it with considerable size in a diverse range of countries. When we look at the Dow relative to gold, we see that there have been three important peaks in the last 100 years. One was in 1929, the other was in the 50s and or the early 60s, I think, and the other was in 2000, 1999-2000. Those were three big bull markets for equities, which all burst at increasing heights relative to the price of gold, and on all occasions, gold retraced the entire advance over the coming decade and came back to a region of approximately where the Dow is approximately five times the value of gold. Well, the Dow is currently at 8,500, so that would suggest a considerable premium to where gold is today, but when it gets there, we will almost certainly be in the final stages of what has been a very big bull market for gold, and will almost certainly be even bigger bull markets for some other commodities. If we see a big bull market for commodities, it is almost certainly to going to correspond with higher yields and higher inflation in the rest of the economy. The stock markets are unlikely to perform in this type of environment in real terms, in other words, in inflation-adjusted terms. In nominal terms, they could do reasonably well. And of course, that sector of the stock market that is most attuned to whatever the bull story is at the time has the potential to move into a bubble phase. On the other hand, the wider economy or the wider stock market is unlikely to perform in such an environment. That's why we need to get the inflation call right. And the threat of deflation is being discounted rather heavily today. But that may also have at least something to do with the fact that markets have been rallying for the last 3 months. Whenever this rally gives way to the inevitable consolidation and of these impressive gains, we can expect the deflationary in our argument to come back to the fore. But I think it centers on one key question. Do we trust not just the central bank in whatever country it is you're listening, but all central banks, because they've been working together, to withdraw the masses of liquidity that they've been adding to the market at the correct time? Because the one thing that politicians are good at is at getting elected. And their interest will be best served by making sure that any economic recovery that takes hold over the next 18 months has legs and will continue to push upwards. And if that means keeping the liquidity in the market longer than it's needed in order to ensure that their desire is fulfilled, then they're likely to do it. And that would suggest that we are currently in stage where the seeds of the next inflationary cycle are being sown. It was this time last year that we saw that inflation was becoming a problem. Central bankers tend to believe that they have the solution to inflation, which is to raise interest rates and to tighten monetary conditions. But we also see that they are willing to act aggressively in order to support markets. The question is how long that they can continue to do that if growth does not pick up in a recovery scenario. What happens when inflation becomes a problem, but growth remains at a low level or remains fragile? Then they're going to be in a sticky situation. And that is where the potential for inflation to become a sizable problem could really take off. But what we are looking, well, I haven't talked about the dollar at all, and I realize I've been talking for half an hour, so I'm going to keep this short but sweet. Well, sure, maybe it will be up to you to decide whether it's sweet or not. The dollar has rallied very significantly this year. It's giving up that advance now, and the dollar was considerably weaker throughout the month of May. That has also helped to put a bid under commodity markets. But the rally that we saw was so remarkably strong that it broke the downtrend that has been in evidence for much of the last 4 to 5 years. It would suggest that the dollar is in a bottoming out process. This bottoming out process could take a number of years, in which case there will be periods of time when the weak dollar is massively conducive to commodity prices and emerging market stocks moving to the upside. But in those periods when the dollar moves upwards against a number of other currencies, particularly commodity producing currencies, then it will be less conducive to the new bull market stories pushing upwards, and it is probably likely to coincide with medium-term corrections within any new bull market that unfolds. It does mean that we are going to have to start paying much more attention to the way that currencies are performing because they are likely to be lead indicators for other markets. With that, I think I will leave you for the weekend, but I'd like to wish all the best to all of you.